From McMinnville, Oregon, this is Crisscrossing Science, the podcast that ponders where it all came from. I'm Michael Crosser. Next to me is Chad Tilburg. And today's title is From the Big Bang to the Big Chill. Hey, Chad.
How you doing, Mike?
Oof. Yeah. Doing all right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't complain any more than I usually do. So.
Okay. So we've got Big Bang, Big Chill. We have, what, 80s movie and modern day sitcom. That's what we're talking about today?
Yes.
Good.
So the Big Bang Theory,
mm-hmm.
where it all started,
uh-huh.
all the way to the Big Chill.
Yes.
We should start this out. I'm sure I've tried to go through this before, but one cool thing about astronomy is that, you know, light doesn't travel instantaneously all over the place. There's a finite speed to the light. That light travels at a finite speed. It's really fast.
Yes.
But it travels at 2.99792458 times 10 to the 8th meters per second. And that is really fast.
Yes.
But it is finite. And the universe is huge.
How big?
How big? Well, let me tell you that it takes light from the moon 1 second to reach us.
Okay.
Because it's so far away, because the moon is 2.99. Anyway.
Times 10 to the 8th.
Yes. Meters away.
Okay.
Light from the sun. It takes a little over 8 minutes for the light from the sun to reach us.
Okay.
If you look directly at the sun, you're not looking at what the sun is right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at it what it was 8 minutes ago.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. The nearest star to us other than the sun is Alpha Centauri. It takes about 4 years for that light to reach us.
Hmm.
We can't see it here in the northern hemisphere, but you can see it in the southern hemisphere. People in Australia are not seeing it what it is today. They're seeing it what it was 4 years ago.
Okay.
And on out. There are stars in the Milky Way galaxy that are hundreds of millions of light years away from us, which means we're not looking at it what it is now. We're looking at what it was hundreds of millions of years ago.
How do you even measure that?
How far away things are?
Yeah.
It's really tricky.
Okay.
Ooh, that's a whole...
Is that a whole other episode?
That's a whole thing all by itself. But
okay.
So if they're pretty close to us, you can use... Oh, I'm blanking on the name of that word.
The Doppler shift or something? Or is that involved?
That will actually be part of our story later on today.
Oh, okay.
The Doppler shift.
Okay. Teaser.
Yeah. So it's like when surveyors are on the side of the road. What is it? So the fact that our eyes have stereoscopic vision.
Okay.
Like if you look at something with your left eye and squint your right and then flip it,
mm-hmm.
you'll see slightly different images. You can use that for stars that are really, really close to us. You can measure stars such as Alpha Centauri, how much it shifts relative to other stars that are behind it.
Okay.
So like if we look at it now and then 6 months from now, look at the same star and measure how much it shifted relative to its nearby stars. That gives us some sense of its distance away.
Hmm.
But that's only useful for a handful of stars, because most everything is much farther away from that.
And so they're so far away that the effect of what you just described would be so small as to be undetectable.
Right.
Okay.
But that gets you started on being able to say, like, okay, well, we know a particular star will give off a certain quality of light. It'll have a certain temperature, for instance. And so you can look at the light that it gives off at that temperature, and you can find other stars that are just like that. And so the main tool that you would have is basically, if you know how luminous something is at the start, and I had to use the word luminous because that's how much light is actually being given off. And you compare to how bright it appears to us here on Earth. Because as you get farther away from a light source, it gets dimmer. Because all that light is basically just spreading out.
Yeah.
Right? And so the farther away you are, you know, I like to think of like blowing up a balloon, that, you know, when you first start blowing up a balloon, you can see the latex is not really stretched out very much. And maybe it's all a very dense, dark color. And you keep blowing it up and getting it bigger. And then the balloon looks like a lighter color because you're stretching out all the fabric.
Yeah.
More and more.
Yeah. Or so like if you took a Sharpie and put a little dot on the balloon, when you blew the balloon up, that little stuff would be all spread out.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's happening with light. So when something is farther away, it looks dimmer than when you're really close to it. So anyway, you can look at enough stars and you can kind of figure out like, okay, so this star is just like this other star. This star that's farther away is the same kind of star. It's the same temperature. It's the same size as this other star that I know the distance of.
Okay, so because you know the size and the temperature of the star, then from that you can predict the luminosity?
Yes.
Okay, I was wondering. And so you compare... By knowing temperature and size, you can get how much it's actually kicking off.
Right.
And measuring its brightness, you can get how much is actually reaching us.
Exactly.
And that's a function of the distance.
Exactly.
Okay.
And there are lots of tricks to know what the luminosity is. And this will actually come up later on today, in fact, that, for instance, if you have something that you know exactly how much luminosity is given off, such as the most recent ones are what are called type 1A supernova, then you can use that as a standard candle. You can use that as something that you know how much light is giving off, but it only appears to be this bright to us. So you can measure how far away it is.
Hmm.
All right, so keep that in mind for later on.
Hmm. Noted.
But it's really cool thinking about, in astronomy, that means that because it takes a finite amount of time for light to reach us, we are literally looking back in time.
Mm-hmm.
When we look through a telescope and look at like a distant galaxy, we are literally looking at what that galaxy was hundreds of millions of years ago, billions of years ago, because of how far away it is from us.
Yeah, I like thinking about that.
Yeah.
I mean, the light that is reaching us left that sun when there were dinosaurs.
Right.
Or something like, or even older stuff.
That's, or like, that's we're cool. Looking out at this star, it's probably not there anymore. It probably blew up a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Or if there were life on a planet nearby, it's probably long dead.
Right. Yeah, and that is actually an interesting question about like the time is also an issue there, that you know, you could have had a whole civilization lived and totally died out.
Yep.
And then no more trace of that stuff anymore. Yeah. Anyway.
So we're looking back in time. We're looking back in time when we use our telescope.
Yeah. And so one thing that's kind of neat is that you can look back and you can see what the universe was like previously. So astronomers are not guessing at how a star evolves necessarily, because they can look back in time, looking at just other stars that are farther away. They're seeing what the lifespan things were.
Okay. How far away are the most distant things that we've been able to observe?
I think the most distant stars, or like pinpoint objects, I think are on the order of like 10 billion years.
Hmm.
So the universe is estimated right now is about 13.9 billion years, but it took a while for stars to really form and so forth. Now, there is something called cosmic background radiation, which we will talk about as well.
Okay.
That is basically out at that distance as well. But let's talk about all the evidence that we have for all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, like it was assumed that the universe was basically static, that it wasn't really changing too much, that we can see that the Earth is orbiting around the sun, and so we've got this stable orbit going on there. It turns out it's also clear that the sun is orbiting around something in the Milky Way galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So our sun is basically orbiting just like we are orbiting the sun. It's just sort of a bigger structure. So the Milky Way galaxy is just, it's sort of like a solar system, but of stars.
Mm-hmm.
And then people found out that there were other galaxies outside of our own, outside of the Milky Way. And they started studying those. And at first it was assumed that those were not moving.
So they were just kind of static. The distance away from this next galaxy was kind of constant with our own.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And people were trying to come up with different theories for how that could all develop and so forth. And in fact, a guy that you may have heard of, a guy named Albert Einstein, came up with an idea for what he called general relativity. And in that, he was like, well, if it's static, you know, I've got this term for gravity, basically. But if gravity is pulling things together, it should not be static. It should just be all falling in on itself. But it's not. And so he made up this extra term, this like anti-gravity term.
Is that what he called it? Anti-gravity? Or was it something in German?
I don't know.
Okay, sorry.
But he came up with this extra term.
Because there had to be something that kept it from all collapsing in on itself.
Yes.
So it's...
Yeah, something that's fighting the gravity has to be pushing it back out to keep it stable. And then another guy that you may have heard of, his name is Edwin Hubble, for whom a telescope has been named since then. He actually was studying galaxies, and he used a measurement of the Doppler effect to look at the galaxies.
Should we explain the Doppler effect?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Are you a big NASCAR fan?
I don't want to alienate anybody in our audience, but no, it's not something that I gravitate towards.
Ah, nice.
Thank you. I'm familiar with it.
Cars driving fast.
I'm familiar with cars and the concept, and I'm familiar with
I'm glad you did that.
Yeah.
That sound, because you know, even little kids will do that because they hear that sound. So if you really think about it, the high pitch is when the car is approaching you.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as it passes, that's when it goes to this lower pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this yeow, and it switches as soon as it passes you.
Mm-hmm.
That is the Doppler effect in a nutshell.
Yeah. I always remember when I was a kid, as you said, this is something you notice, the sound that cars or other moving things make. But then one thing I noticed when I was a kid is when I am riding in the car, it doesn't make that sound when I go past something.
Right.
Because the sound I'm hearing when I'm riding along the car is just a constant ee.
Yes, of the engine and making noise.
So, yeah, it wasn't until I learned about the Doppler effect that that all fell into place. But it's something I noticed, though.
Yeah.
So, okay, so sound waves.
Sound waves do this.
Yeah.
Any wave does this. It's really what your perception is of how the waves are going. When I teach this in class, I have the students close their eyes and pretend we're in the ocean in Hawaii.
I'm doing that right now.
Yeah, not off the coast of Oregon because then everybody's cold. But imagine we're in Hawaii and we're counting the waves that are hitting us, you know? So like, so that's the first wave. Okay. And then, you know, it washes back out. You know, maybe you count to 4 seconds and then the next wave comes.
Okay.
And it washes back out and next wave 4 seconds or something like that.
Okay.
So that would be its normal period.
Okay.
Would be 4 seconds. If you walk into the ocean, you're kind of cutting that wave off a little bit sooner.
Yes.
Right. So instead of counting up to four, maybe the first wave hits you, but you're also walking deeper into the ocean. So then you're going to catch the next wave sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it would only be 3 seconds. But to you, your perception of that frequency is going to change because you are moving towards that wave. And that same thing happens with the sound. So with the sound, if the sound source is coming towards you, you are cutting off that wave. So you're going to hear a higher pitch because you're running into the waves faster than mm-hmm. just standing still.
Mm-hmm.
And the opposite also happens. If you're running out of the ocean, now the wave would have to catch up to you to overtake you.
Yeah.
And so rather than 4 seconds, it might be 5 or 6 seconds before okay. you feel the next wave.
So in this analogy, it's the observer that's actually in motion.
Right.
But then in the case of a car or a train going past you, the observer is stationary and the thing that's making the wave is in motion.
Right.
So I guess it doesn't really matter.
There are some details in the math. But
okay.
the idea of it doesn't matter.
So the overall, it's just kind of the relative position of the two objects
right.
to each other through time.
Yes.
Okay.
And the same thing happens with light as well.
Okay.
That if you have two objects that are moving towards each other, let's say we had a green light bulb and it was moving towards you. If it was moving fast enough, you could detect that it would actually shift in color a little bit. And if it's moving towards you, it would actually appear more bluish. If it's moving away from you, it might appear reddish to you. And so astronomers call this a redshift and blue shift. Regardless of what the actual waves frequencies are,
mm-hmm.
they'll just use that as a terminology. But generally, they're looking at like radio waves or something like that.
Yeah, because it's like the general direction of those two things.
Yeah.
Okay.
But actually, this Doppler effect is how police cars know that you're speeding.
Yeah.
They're actually shooting a pulse at you.
Uh-huh.
It bounces off your car and comes back at them. Because it's bounced off you and you've cut off the speed a little bit, it's now coming back at a slightly different color than when
oh.
it was going out.
And so their little radar detector compares the outgoing wavelength to the incoming wavelength.
Exactly.
And that difference is your speed.
Yes.
Oh, all That's, right.
So there you go.
Wow.
And this also happens in astronomy. And so this is what Edwin Hubble was looking at. He was looking at distant galaxies. And another thing that we haven't talked about yet is that all stars are made up of mostly hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And hydrogen gives off a very specific set of light colors.
Okay.
You know, it has a particular fingerprint of light. And so he was looking at these spectra for hydrogen and noticed that all of them in all these galaxies were redshifted a little bit. We know what hydrogen, we have it here on Earth. We know exactly what mm-hmm. colors hydrogen gives off. But all of the colors were not exactly what they were here on Earth. They were all shifted a little bit in the red direction.
Were they all shifted the same amount?
No. It depended on how far away they were. So the ones that are farther away were actually shifted more in the red than the ones that were a little bit closer to us. But everything was shifted red.
And because they're red shifted, that means that those galaxies must be moving away.
Yes.
The source of that light has to be moving away from you.
Yes.
Okay.
Which means that the universe must be expanding out. It must be getting bigger if everything is moving away from us.
So that was Hubble's great insight.
Yes.
Okay.
By the way, just for historical purposes, when Einstein learned about this, he said that his extra term, that anti-gravity term, was his greatest blunder. And he apologized for doing that.
And then he was never heard from again.
Never heard. You know, he just grew his hair out and was like, bruh.
Well, okay. So what does this imply then if it's not the anti-gravity term, something pushing stuff away?
Well, what that could happen then is that if everything is moving outward,
mm-hmm.
if you just reverse the video,
uh-huh.
going back in time, everything would just be really close to each other. So it suggests that maybe there was a huge explosion that just propelled everything outward
uh-huh.
from one spot. That this one event that just exploded everything outward. This is what became known as the Big Bang.
Okay. So here on Earth, I'm assuming Hubble was doing his work from the surface of the Earth.
Yes.
Right? And so it didn't matter which direction he looked in the night sky. Mm-hmm. It was all redshifted.
Yes.
Okay. And so does that mean that the Earth is the center of everything or something? Or is it more redshifted off in this direction and a little bit less redshifted in that direction? Like, could you pinpoint where?
You cannot pinpoint where.
Okay. Why not?
Well,
I mean, do you see the point I'm making? I don't know if I'm making it very well.
That's a great point.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great question that it, since everything is moving away, your first thought is like, oh, well, we must be the middle and everything's flying away from us. But that's not really a true thing. So we could go back to thinking about that balloon we just talked about.
Okay.
You know, if you put a few dots on the balloon and you blew it up, all those dots are getting farther away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all getting farther away from each other. It doesn't mean that one is the center of it. Everything else is avoiding each other.
Okay.
I like to think about fireworks and to imagine, like, you know, this one little sparkler that is shooting out. It's going faster than the ones that were packed in tighter, right? Because it's otherwise it would be overtaken by those. So it would say that the ones behind it are going away because it's going faster.
Got it.
But then the ones on the other side that are going faster than it are also going farther away faster.
Oh, okay. I see.
So either direction, you're going to say things are moving away from you, but you would argue it that either I'm moving away from it or this other one's moving away from me. But the result is they're both moving away.
From your point of observation, they look like they're moving away.
Right.
Okay.
So yeah, so we're not at the center of the universe necessarily. It's assumed that we're not actually at the center
okay.
of the universe.
Okay. All right.
But it turns out we have no evidence. We don't know where we are in terms of the entire universe. If we're like right on the edge or near the edge, everything from our vantage point looks uniform, the same in every direction.
Huh. So there's not more stuff in one direction versus the other direction either.
No. No.
Kind of boggles my mind a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, he did surveys of the sky and found basically in any direction that you look, you get the same. It's a random distribution of stuff, but it's the same random density if you look out this direction as any other direction.
Okay. And so, as you said, if you rewind the tape, and that must have suggested that it all coalesced into one.
Yeah, that everything thing. Seems to have started from one spot.
One spot.
Yeah.
How big? How big must have that been?
Tiny.
Tiny?
Yeah.
Like the size of my pinky fingernail or? I mean, are we talking about like all the matter in the universe?
Yeah.
That currently exists was compressed down into this
yes.
tiny little area.
Yeah.
Okay.
It would appear that everything came from one spot. And what's really cool about that is that you would say, well, all right, if there really was like this big explosion, shouldn't we see like some remnants of that, some sort of leftover something?
Mm-hmm.
Like some radiation just everywhere.
Sort of like a ringing in your ears.
Yeah. Shouldn't that just like exist everywhere in whatever direction? And it turns out it does.
Hmm.
There's something called cosmic background radiation. And they've mapped out the sky very carefully. And this is in every single direction you point a telescope. It's the same background radiation everywhere.
How do you see this exactly?
Well, it's not in the visible spectrum. Yeah.
What kind of telescope?
Well, it needs a very long wavelength. So it's sort of a radio telescope that you have to be looking at.
Okay.
But it's the same in every single direction that you point it.
The same or just like randomly distributed?
It's surprisingly uniform everywhere.
Okay.
There are some subtle variations here and there, but they're actually really, really small compared to like the overall signal of it.
Hmm.
And it's actually interesting because the small, subtle variations, that's where mass used to be at the very beginning. So you can kind of count up and estimate how much mass was in the universe to start with by looking at the background radiation.
Hmm.
That's something that is still actively being researched even now.
Hmm.
That people are looking at that and trying to figure out, you know, how much mass is in the universe and trying to figure out those answers there.
Hmm.
So... yeah, I mean, it's kind of a fun story, this background radiation, is that these two guys, Penzias and Wilson, worked at Bell Labs. Bell Labs used to be AT&T, Bell, you know, so here in the United States, basically all telephone communications was a Bell of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's been broken up over the years into all these other phone companies and stuff. But so back in the day, there was something called Bell Labs, a research institute, basically, that focused a lot on doing research for like communications and stuff. These two guys were working, trying to find some radio detector that would communicate at some frequency that no one else has been using, so then it would be a nice clean signal. But then they hooked it up and they turned it on and they're like, ah, oh, crap, we're getting some background signal right here. Point it over there. Let's see if that's better. No, it's the same. Ah, that's terrible. And they actually wrote about how they thought, well, maybe, you know, we keep getting these pigeons living there. Maybe. So they kept cleaning the thing and chasing the birds away and all this stuff. And then eventually talking to more people, they eventually realized that it was actually this cosmic background radiation.
They thought it was an artifact.
Yeah.
They thought it was something wrong with their machine.
Yeah. But instead, it was Nobel Prize worthy discovery. So.
Cool. So this background radiation.
Yeah.
That is literally radio waves that had their origin at that moment of the Big Bang.
Yes.
And they've been just bouncing around in the universe since then.
Just expanding outward.
Expanding outward. Okay. Yeah. And so because they're expanding outward, that's why they're such a long wavelength now?
Exactly. Yeah.
Because they've been continuously redshifted?
Yes.
Or is that? Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's a hard concept to really understand, but yes.
Okay. Okay.
Basically, they've been expanding. They've been stretching out over time, and they look just a very long wavelength, but they were probably much shorter out a long time ago. But,
okay.
You know, I like to think of that radiation as sort of like just the signature of the explosion.
Okay. Okay, so we had this. We have this evidence that everything must have been one point at the beginning and then exploded. And so when I'm thinking of an explosion, I'm thinking that the particles sort of get this initial push and then they accelerate for a bit and they fly out and then they just sort of like sort of peters out and
land down someplace.
And
yeah.
Land down. So is that what we've got? So things are just sort of petering out?
That's an interesting point because it turns out they're not doing that.
Yeah.
And this actually was a big surprise. So like back when I was really learning a lot of this stuff, there were huge debates about what the end of the universe was going to look like.
Don't spoil it for me. I'm still on the first half of the book.
No, that's what we're...
Oh,
that's part spoiler of our title.
Spoiler alert.
Is what the end of the universe will look like.
Oh.
Because you can imagine, like, if I threw a baseball up in the air, what does the baseball do as soon as it leaves my hand? It's immediately slowing down and slowing down and slowing down.
The whole time, right?
Yeah. So if I'm throwing it straight up, you know, it's going to slow down, and eventually it'll stop and turn around and come back down.
Mm-hmm.
If I launched a rocket or something or threw something hard enough that it could actually escape the Earth's gravitational pull, it would still be slowing down until it's completely escaped it. So if I throw a ball up, it's going to be slowing down no matter what. But even if I threw it really, really high so that it would eventually leave, it's still slowing down all the way through.
Yeah.
It just didn't slow down enough that it actually turned around and came back down.
But now it's escaped Earth's gravity and it's just sort of like gently floating off.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that actually brings up two possible outcomes for the end of the universe. If there's enough mass in the universe in total, then the universe is expanding outward. Maybe eventually it'll slow down to a point that it'll turn back around and fall back in on itself.
Mm-hmm. The big crunch.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So astronomers had, you know, a field day naming these things. They call that the big crunch.
Okay.
So you had a big bang and then a big crunch. And honestly, that's the sexiest outcome for me.
Oh, really?
To think about the universe just being this like...
So it could just be this repeating cycle of that.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that just is a cool idea to me.
Yeah.
The other option would be if there's not enough mass, then it's never going to turn around and stop. So it's just going to continue expanding outward forever. And eventually all the stars will die eventually.
Because all the matter in the universe gets so far apart from each other.
And like the reason we have a temperature here on Earth is because the sun is heating us up for the most part.
Uh-huh.
Eventually that'll go out. Eventually everything will just cool down.
Uh-huh.
So that would be the big chill.
Okay.
You know, when I was in grad school, that's what people were talking about. They were trying to go through carefully being like, okay, so is there enough mass for this to happen or for that to happen? I don't know. And trying to calculate all the stuff and count everything up and trying to figure out a whole bunch of stuff. And then it turns out that more recently, two groups independently did some measurements. They were actually trying to measure how much of a slowdown stuff really far away was doing. And so they were doing this with the Doppler effect, right? They were trying to see how much of a redshift is if I have a really bright supernova happening far, far away. A certain type of supernova happens the same every single time. I don't want to get into too much of it, but so a supernova will happen if you have a certain amount of mass in a star. And if it's more massive, then it's a bigger explosion.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're on this threshold, and so there are certain stars that... A neighbor of theirs will just go through a life cycle where they'll give up some extra mass, some extra stuff, and just gradually add on a little bit more mass to the star. And then it'll cross that threshold and have the supernova.
Hmm.
So every star that does that, though, do you remember there was a movie, True Lies?
Yes. Yeah.
So there was a scene in True Lies where these guys were in a car that was about to run off the overpass or something like that. And they were just barely teetering. They were perfectly balanced. I'm like, oh, okay, we're fine. And then like a bird landed on the hood.
Okay.
And then they fell off. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's what these types of stars are doing, these supernova. This type 1A supernova is doing.
Uh-huh.
It's right on the edge, and then you just add like one more feather, and then it...
Oh, okay.
So every one of these explosions happens exactly the same way.
Okay.
So we know exactly how much light it's giving off.
Uh-huh.
And then you can compare that to what it looks like from here.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so they were able to do that to measure how far away these things are.
Uh-huh.
And then they were also able to use the Doppler effect to detect how fast they're moving away from us.
Okay. So they have the distance as well as their speed relative to our position.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And so what you would expect is that we're looking back in time at these things that are really far away from us. They should be going at a different speed than what they are now,
yeah,
close by to us. And that's not what they found. They actually found that everything is speeding up, that apparently the universe is not just expanding, it's actually accelerating outward.
So the things that were further away were actually getting further away even faster.
Exactly. Yeah.
Huh.
Which makes no sense.
Okay. There must be something propelling them on.
Right. And so that's caused a lot of people in cosmology and stuff to scratch their heads and try to think through like, huh, what could possibly be causing that? And so it's actually kind of fun. A lot of people have been bringing up this hack named Einstein again and his greatest blunder,
uh-huh,
and bringing up the fact that he had this extra term there,
uh-huh,
for pushing things back outwards.
Yeah.
And so that's actually gotten exciting for a lot of people again all of a sudden.
Huh.
That maybe he actually was right.
He was onto something, perhaps.
Yeah, and that his greatest blunder was actually thinking that he was wrong. So nowadays, people generally call that dark energy, which maybe you've heard in the news and stuff
okay.
like that.
Okay, uh-huh.
Maybe there's this extra thing that's just pushing things out to accelerate outward faster.
And so, I mean, we call it dark because why? Because is this the only evidence that we have that it exists at this point?
For the most part, there are some other things that kind of tie into it as well.
Okay.
But yeah, for the most part, whatever this is it's not giving off light itself. And so
it just seems to do the opposite thing of gravity.
Right.
Whatever gravity is.
Yeah. So some people have described like maybe a vacuum like kind of sucks things in. And so maybe it's the vacuum of space is kind of pulling, I don't know, but there are not any really good answers for what it is at the moment.
Hmm.
And so that's actually on the frontier of cosmology that people are trying to figure all that stuff out.
Hmm. So bear with me here, my biology brain. But what I'm thinking about the Big Bang, mm-hmm, and this moment of when everything was all compressed down and stuff, I have a hard time wrapping my head around what three-dimensional space would have been like, because it's like, did it just not exist?
So the tricky part. Like, so that
was there space, but there just wasn't the matter there to fill it up? Or is space and time being created at the same instant that of the Big Bang?
This is sort of a mind freak of it all. Yeah. And so I actually tell people this, that, you know, we can look out to the universe and see what things were like billions of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we can see this cosmic background radiation. We can see some other things that are clearly from shortly after the Big Bang. And we can have models saying like, well, you know, in order to have gotten to this point, it had to have been like this many seconds before or something. And so,
whoa,
like I've seen models that are like, okay, well, you know, at a microsecond after the Big Bang, then this is what things had to have looked like in order to evolve out the way that we see it now and stuff. But nobody knows what actually caused the Big Bang. There's no evidence at all to have any understanding of what triggered the Big Bang,
mm-hmm,
of what anything looked like before the Big Bang. Anything like that. That is a complete Wild West.
Was there a before the Big Bang?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Hmm.
For me, since there's no experiment to do anything with it, then I can't disprove anything that what you say. So you can come up with anything.
Excellent.
And I'll have to be like, okay, sure.
Something tells me that you wouldn't be equally receptive to all possibilities.
I do not make judgments of that.
Oh, okay.
I honestly don't.
Okay,
if you're saying like, oh, well, what about some guy just snaps his fingers like Thanos, except in reverse.
Yeah.
It's like, well.
Turtles all the way down.
Turtles all the way down. Whatever you say, it's like, I don't have any evidence against that. So that's something that I think people don't really normal, like real people, non-science people understand about how science actually works.
Like, uh-huh.
Usually we're not trying to prove that something happens. Usually we're trying to prove that what we think is happening is wrong, that it's actually something else is happening.
We're trying to falsify stuff.
Exactly.
And taking another crack at it. And if it's still standing, then we gain more confidence in that particular explanation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to what happened before the Big Bang, there's no way to access that information.
Yeah.
So, you know, as long as whatever you say happens and gets us to the same starting point,
sure.
Then I can't argue with you.
Okay.
I can't disprove you, so therefore it's equally valid as anything else.
Okay.
Or it's equally invalid as anything else.
Okay. So are we heading towards a Big Chill then?
It appears that way.
Just faster than we perhaps initially thought. Rather than just sort of drifting off into a Big Chill, we're sort of barreling towards a Big Chill thanks to dark energy.
Yeah.
So how much time do I have, Mike?
Ooh, I was going to say you should write your will today, but but there's no point in that either.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Right.
No, this is a long way off in the future.
Okay. Well, that's cheerful.
You're welcome. This episode was recorded in the KSLC studios on the beautiful campus of Linfield College. Rodi Ortega wrote our theme music. If you have an episode idea, email us at crisscrossingsci@gmail.com. All one word, all lowercase. Subscribe to this podcast and you will automatically download the latest episode as soon as I actually post it. While there, you should leave a comment and a rating. That will help other people find our podcast. Until next time, thanks for listening.